Waking you up on Sunday. Rob McLaughlin, City Talk 105.9.
And as a forerunner to Bill Gleeson's programme this morning at 11 o'clock here on City Talk, let's turn right now to the economy. Well, don't bury your head in the pillow just yet, because it may not be as bad as you think. But turning to the business section of today's Sunday Times, the headline, Economy Heads for Horror Movie. Britain is facing an economic horror movie because of a toxic mixture of moribund credit markets and volatile oil prices, according to a leading forecasting group. The Ernst & Young Item Club, which uses the Treasury's economic model, will argue in a report tomorrow that the economy will struggle to avoid recession. This comes as a survey by the Institute of Directors shows that business confidence has slumped to the lowest level ever recorded, with company chiefs increasingly gloomy about the investment climate. Well, in these circumstances, this week I caught up with the deputy leader of the Liberal Democrats in London, the Treasury spokesman Vince Cable, and I wanted to really get a feel for his view on the economic prospects. So I caught up with him at the House of Commons.
Vince Cable, welcome to the programme. Thank you very much indeed for joining us again. When you look at all the economic indices at the moment, are you pessimistic or are you optimistic that there is hope for the British economy?
Well, I'm worried. I'm not in the forecasting business. I represent people in Parliament. But certainly the consensus of the people I talk to in the business world is that the people are very worried. They're worried primarily because of the collapse that's been taking place in the housing market. As you know, many of the leading builders are now going bust because they can't sell their homes, prices are falling, and growing numbers of people are being sucked into repossession and negative equity. And we're probably just at the beginning of that. And there are lots of industries that spin off from building which are beginning to be hit too. We also see what's happening around the rest of the Western world, the United States sliding into recession, Europe slowing down. We're inevitably affected by all that. Some of these problems are international, of which we've got no control, but some of them are domestic. You know, the British government allowed a big bubble in credit and housing prices to grow up here, and it's now bursting with very damaging consequences. So I think the simple answer to your question is there are some very worrying trends.
Do you think that the government at this moment can do a lot, or do you think they're actually in a cleft stick in terms of there is very little room for manoeuvre for them to make any action that's going to give confidence back?
There is limited room for manoeuvre, partly because, quite rightly, interest rates are now set by the Bank of England independently of political interference, and their job is to keep a lid on inflation through interest rates, and they're going to have to maintain that position. The government's budget position is not comfortable. Their deficit's growing, and so there isn't a great deal of scope, at least in the short run, for stimulating the economy in that way. But nonetheless, the government isn't powerless. I think what I would emphasise is the need for some sensible interventions in the housing market to stop large-scale repossessions growing, to acquire surplus property from developers who can't sell it and make use of it for social renting for people in need. And I think if people would feel more contented or less discontented, I think if they felt the burden of taxation was more equitably shared, and some of the people who did phenomenally well in the boom period, if they were taxed a little more so that we can cut taxes on people at the bottom.
So even in these circumstances, as you would still tax the rich again?
Yes, within reason. I mean, you put it in a way that sounds a bit threatening, but actually people have been making enormous capital gains from property development and things of this kind, paying half the rate of tax that they pay on income. That's not sensible.
But to do it at this moment could actually make the situation worse.
I don't think so. I think the key point at the moment is to restore the confidence of people at the bottom end and in the middle income. Who are suffering a severe squeeze, and if we can do something to cut their taxes, that would be very appropriate.
In terms of cutting taxes, what would you do over fuel costs?
Well, I don't think we're talking here about petrol and diesel. I don't think there's anything at the moment that the government should be doing rushing in. They've got until the autumn. Well, let's see what happens to oil prices. Let's see what happens to government revenue. Also, I think it's an illusion to give the impression that it's easy to go around cutting petrol duty, because, you know, where does the money come from? People will say, well, you're getting all the revenue from the North Sea, but actually many other sources of government revenue are collapsing. Income tax, corporation tax, stamp duty. duty. So the budget's getting worse. It's not getting better. There's no pot of gold out there that can be raided. What I would do, however, I mean, there are people in remote rural areas who are suffering. They've got no alternative to public transport. Public transport doesn't exist, buses and trains, so they have to use their cars, and I think some targeted help through differential duty rates would be helpful to them.
When you look at what's happened with the banks, I mean, earlier this week, the Alliance in Leicester was taken over, of course, by Santander, the Spanish bank. Yeah. I mean, it went for a fifth of the last bid value. It went for something like $1.3 billion if it's accepted by shareholders. Is that an indication that things are still going to get ropey in the banking area?
Well, the banks, or some of them, particularly those who have large exposure to mortgage lending, are in difficulty. But it's not just them. A lot of people who've made big advances in personal loans. I mean, it has to be said that in recent years, the banks have been pretty reckless with their lending behaviour, lending multiples of income and value of people's houses, which are just not sensible and realistic, and they are now going to be caught with bad loans. And we've seen what's happened in the United States, where the problem is much further advanced than it is here. I obviously can't predict the problems of other banks, but I suspect that others will have the same problem. In other words, a large loss of shareholder value followed by the need for major restructuring and takeover, and this is going to happen.
Do you fear another Northern Rock on the horizon?
Not in precisely that form, because I think everybody now realises the government will protect depositors. You don't need to queue around the block for your bank deposits. That's not an issue. I mean, there are issues around, say, an Icelandic banks, which are looking rather fragile. But no, I don't think a Northern Rock-style panic, but I think we will get into a position where banks have lost so much of their value that they are effectively taken over by either sovereign wealth funds from overseas or by other banks here.
In your assessment, how long is this going to go on for? How long is this dip?
I have no idea. I don't have a crystal ball. I suspect that the downturn is probably more serious and longer than the government anticipates, but I have no idea. And I don't want to be gloomy. I wish well for my constituents and everybody else, and I hope things will turn around.
There are reports of a potential reshuffle and that Alistair Darling may go. Removing the Chancellor at this stage, is that
no,
a good thing?
I don't think that would be sensible. I mean, Alistair Darling is he's clearly struggling and has made a lot of mistakes, or has been identified with a lot of mistakes. It's not clear he made them, whether they were made in 10 Downing Street. I mean, there's a danger, of course, that he will simply be made the scapegoat for Gordon Brown's unpopularity, and that would be, I don't think it would help the government to get rid of him. And it wouldn't be fair either.
One other report came out, of course, towards the end of last week, which is the Equitable Life report, which does affect a lot of people in the UK and some of the listeners to this programme, I'm sure. Do you think they should now be compensated by government?
Well, there certainly needs to be a mechanism to look at the issue of compensation, and indeed the government must follow the recommendations of the Ombudsman report. Otherwise, what's the Ombudsman for if the government just disregards it? The finding was that the government had been guilty, not just this government, the previous government too, of serial maladministration, quite devastating language, appalling incompetence in the Department of Trade and Industry, the Treasury, and the government actuary. And what the government has been asked to do by the Ombudsman is, first of all, to apologise, and I think that's the first step, and then to set up a mechanism to look independently and fairly at the compensation issues. Obviously, I can't say how much money is involved and how the government then pays for it. I mean, that's a further down the track. But I think the principle has been accepted by the Ombudsman, and there needs to be a proper mechanism to look at it independently.
Finally, you were, of course, for a brief period, the acting leader of your party. You now have a new leader, a young Turk.
Mm-hmm.
How's he doing?
I think Mick Clegg's doing very well. He's unlike me. I was doing a quick sprint. He's there for a marathon. He's got to pace himself. He's got to gradually build up his profile.
Do the public know him yet?
I think a lot of people in the public do know him, and when they see him on television, he is a very engaging, intelligent, thoughtful man, and I think he will do very well for us in future years.
Are you missing it?
No, I'm still very busy because I'm the deputy of the party and I speak for us on economic affairs, and in an economic crisis you're always in demand, so I'm as busy as I was then.
All right, Vince Cable, for the moment, as ever, thank you for joining
us.
Thank you.
Waking you up on Sunday, Rob McLaughlin.